This is the Hockey News Podcast. Hey everyone, I'm Ryan Kennedy along with Matt Larkin and Ian Denemy. Welcome to the very first edition of the Hockey News Podcast. Each week, we'll bring our experts together, along with occasional special guests, to talk about the all-important issues in the hockey world. This week, we're talking all things All-Star Game. We'll talk about, who else, Pacific Division captain John Scott, the new 3-on-3 format, and whether the All-Star Game even matters anymore. Later on, we'll also open up the Twitter mailbag and answer some of your questions about the upcoming NHL trade deadline. Thanks for coming along.
All right, we're just a few days away from the All-Star Game, and Matt Larkin here is with us, and you're on your way to Nashville on Thursday for the festivities. Now, despite the presence of some of the biggest names in the hockey world, it seems all eyes will be on Coyotes turned Canadians turned AHL enforcer John Scott. Now that the dust has settled, and we all know he'll be there, what's your take on John Scott, and does his inclusion make you more interested in the game or less?
Well, I think the bet has been made now, and we can debate forever whether it was a mistake to allow the fan voting in the first place that brought John Scott there. But you know what? For now, it was a democratic system. John Scott's here, so all we can do is make the most of it. And yes, while there are certain players that might have more skill, like a Shane Doan or Oliver Ekman-Larsson, would have enjoyed seeing them 3-on-3, there is sort of a sideshow appeal. And, you know, we have to admit, John Scott's not the most skilled guy in the world, but we're all at least a little bit curious to see what he does out there 3-on-3. And I think, in a way, there's some pressure on him. It's up to him to sort of prove that he does have the skills to still be an NHLer.
Yeah, so Ryan, I mean, do you think at the end of the day people are going to be watching to, you know, is he going to be made a joke or will he hold his own? Or, I mean, what do people want to see with John Scott?
I think they want to see fun. I think that's what the All-Star Game is about. And thinking about it myself, wouldn't it be amazing if he went 4-for-4 in the accuracy shooting? You know, and I mean, the crowd's going to be on its feet if he gets threaded a breakaway pass in the actual game itself, 3-on-3. He's probably not going to play a ton of shifts, but can you imagine what the crowd reaction, what Twitter's reaction would be like if John Scott had a breakaway and did some sort of like Pavel Datsyuk dangle? I'm not saying it would be smooth, but you know, a 6'8" enforcer trying some sort of toe drag. I think the goalie would probably leave his five hole open because the roof would come off the place just because it's become such a, not only a talking point, but I think a rallying point for fans, even if it is tongue in cheek, that you know, it's something out of the ordinary, and if the NHL can play it the right way, I think the players are always in the right mind frame at the All-Star Game to keep it loose. They could have fun with it.
And if Merrick Malik can do it,
yeah,
remember that shootout
sure.
10 years ago, if he can do it, if he can pull a move like that, I think John Scott can surprise us too.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, John Scott's a National Hockey League player. He's clearly the least talented player at the All-Star Game, but he's a professional hockey player. We're not talking about taking, you know, the best player from your Sunday night beer league and sticking him next to, you know, Ovechkin and Vladimir Tarasenko. He's a professional hockey player. I don't think he's going to embarrass himself. He's, you know, they might maybe shelter him a little bit, but I would think the guy can play hockey, and maybe we'll get to see that.
Yeah, something that I've always noticed when you go to morning skates, if you go to, you know, summer training sessions, is that even enforcers can pick the top corner mm-hmm. when they have time. And I think that's something that we forget. You know, I mean, John Scott played at, you know, Michigan Tech. He wasn't fighting for those years because you can't fight in college hockey. So there are other things he can do. And as you said, it might not be at the same elite level, but I'm sure he's working on a couple of tricks.
It's funny. It's good you guys mentioned that, too. It reminds me of a story. It was this past summer at BioSteel Camp in Toronto. And this camp had guys training, you know, the likes of Mike Camilleri, Tyler Seguin, Mark Giordano, high-skill players. And there was this new center, this unknown center, this huge guy dangling and setting up guys in the slot. And I thought, who is this guy? And I got down to the ice closer. It was Brian McGrattan. So there you go.
Yeah, it's always funny. If you can take a National Hockey League player and take him out of context and just put him with regular players, they stand out every time. I can remember as a kid during the 94, 95 lockout, some of the guys who used to play in Stratford came back for some exhibition games. And, you know, a guy like Tim Taylor, who, you know, had a nice NHL career but was forever just a fourth-line grinder, you put him out there with, you know, junior B players, and he skates circles around them, picks corners, like you said. It's, I mean, they're good hockey players once they get to that level, no matter what. Okay, so well, since we're talking about skill and that kind of thing, let's talk about the new 3-on-3 format. I think generally people would say they're excited about it. There seems to be some hype. What do you think? Good idea? Bad idea? Just another All-Star Game gimmick?
To me, it's a matter of the league having absolutely nothing to lose. I think the NHL All-Star Game, next to the Pro Bowl and the NFL, their reputation couldn't really be worse. People think it's just guys going out for a skate, so why not? There's absolutely nothing to lose, and that's why I don't understand people who are up in arms about the format. There's nowhere to go but up, and if it works, it's going to be great. If it doesn't work, no problem. They'll try something new next year.
Yeah, I think the important thing is, like, for me, the best All-Star Game is the NBA, because they'll goof around for the first quarter, but then they actually care about that final score, so the fourth quarter is usually, you know, pretty fun. With the NHL, because of the level of contact in the normal game, you can't do that at the All-Star Game. So I think you actually need to have a derivation of the game itself in order to make it fun. And with the 3-on-3 format, I think you're going to see guys like Patrick Kane and Tyler Seguin. They're going to have a lot of fun with that space. Not only that, but with the time restriction, with it being only 20-minute games, with it being a little mini-tournament format, I think you'll have the right combination of competitive juices and also that guys won't just sort of drift through a shift because they're not going to be out there that long. So they can kind of say like, all right, we'll go kind of full out. We'll have some fun. We'll try to win this thing. And if we don't win, then whatever, it's the All-Star Game.
I couldn't agree more. And to me, you know, my favorite All-Star Game is the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and not everyone loves this, but one thing I like about it is incentive. You know, the World Series home field advantage decided in the All-Star Game, and this year we've got that $1 million prize on top of the format that doesn't really call for contact, which I think will produce a better result.
So where does this rank, do you think, compared to the All-Star Fantasy Draft that we did for a couple of years? We all got to laugh at Phil Kessel, and, you know, the old North America versus the world format. I mean, they've tried so many things just in the last 10 or 15 years. Where does this rank?
This is pretty decent. I liked the draft because the players were hilarious. Mm-hmm. When they were making the picks, you could tell that they were very relaxed, to be diplomatic. And that was must-see TV. I remember covering the game last year from Columbus, and they had all the reporters kind of sequestered in a big conference hall watching the draft on a big screen. And we all had a great time just watching those guys have a great time. So I think that was a fun element. Maybe what you do, you know, is some sort of hybrid in the future where either you do the draft again for 3-on-3 teams, you don't make it divisional. Or, you know, one thing I was thinking of that would be kind of fun would be if you had some kind of hook where, you know, like the captains of the teams were, say, like, you know, like brothers or something, like the Sedins got to like pick teams or something like that. I remember, you know, talking to some players one summer about there's always a game in Thunder Bay and the Stahl brothers are there and there's a couple of other NHLers that are from the area. I think maybe Patrick Sharp plays in it. And the rule of the game is that only Stahls are allowed to hit other Stahls. Otherwise, it's non-contact. But if Eric Stahl wants to hip-check Mark, that's totally cool. And everybody abides by it. And I'm not saying you want that necessarily in the All-Star Game, but just giving the players that little something that they can chirp each other about, I think would be a lot of fun. And, I don't know what it would be in Nashville this year other than, you know, if Shea Weber made the picks and Pekka Rinne made other picks or something along those lines. Or you had a rival team, kind of like we were joking the other day with the old Hanna-Barbera Laugh Olympics, where they always had the really rotten villain team. If you had that where, like, you know, all of Nashville's enemies, like Red Wings and Blackhawks and Blues, if they were all on one team, I think the crowd could really have fun with that. So, I mean, there's no there's no end to the scenarios. And I mean, that's the fun thing is you don't have to have consistency.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, the NHL is trying so hard right now to play up rivalries and build rivalries with the division format and then the playoff division format. And then come the All-Star game, you put all these guys from the same division onto the same team. So, yeah, maybe there's a way to change that up so, you know, the Blackhawks and Blues aren't playing together. They still get to play against each other.
Yeah, and can we stop with the all 30 team representation? I feel that somebody made a note of this on Twitter the other day. You know, one year, like, the Oilers had like 9 players plus Glenn Sather was the coach because they were all incredible players.
Yeah, they were a dynasty. That's
yeah,
why.
Exactly.
Being all star, play better.
Exactly. Like, yeah, and it's weird because, like, this year, you know, like, Colorado's not great, but I want to see Nathan MacKinnon 3-on-3. Matt Duchene's great as well. I think they should both be there. And I'm not going to name names of who should not be there, but it just seems like it would be a lot more fun if it was like, these are the all-stars, these are the guys that you want to see. Sorry if your market wasn't included, but you're going to find some sort of hook for those people. And as long as somebody from the hometown squad is there, and you know, you can stack the deck a little. Like I said, you know, Pekka Rinne, even though he's not having the greatest year, obviously he's going to be there because he's a classic NHL goalie, one of the best in the world usually. I just don't think we need all 30 teams represented.
Matt, I feel like you want to name names.
Well, I mean, the easy name to name is John Scott, right? True. I mean, I could have done John Scott, the old cop, but I don't think, you know, it was a given. But I do agree. I mean, I'm gonna miss the fantasy draft because I think the NHL, one thing the NHL has always struggled to do is humanize itself compared to the other major pro sports. The NHL has this sort of aw shucks culture, and guys like PK Subban, who in other sports would be considered superstars, media darlings, often get picked on for being too individualistic, showing too much personality. So that's one thing I loved about the fantasy draft. It really did, you know, show players letting their hair down a little bit. But it's gone, and we'll see what happens with 3-on-3. If it doesn't work, there's a purist in me that kind of misses the old days of the NHL shield color jerseys, East versus West, Wales versus Campbell. I think the closest thing the NHL ever had to an all-star rivalry so far was that.
Yeah, so I mean, it seems, at least for the last 10 years, we're always talking about how to fix the all-star game, what's wrong with it, what's working, what's not. So then, I mean, the question is, why bother? Is there still a place for the All-Star game? And we've missed 5 of them due to lockouts and Olympic conflicts. So is it just kind of irrelevant now?
I think it has a certain place in the culture. And you really just have to accept it for what it is. It's a really nice break for 95% of the league. In what is a tough grinding season. For the NHL itself, it's a spotlight event. It's a chance to reward cities and put the spotlight on cities. Columbus did a great job last year. You know, sounds like Nashville's all in this year, so that's really cool. You can do it with anniversaries and things like that. You know, Montreal had a great outing, you know, a couple of years ago. It's just supposed to be fun. And, you know, for the players, I know speaking with them last year, tons of them brought their families, they bring their dads, their moms, whatever, and it was a big thrill for those folks. And I think that's nice for the players to take that mental break where it's like, I don't have to put on the scary face tonight. I can just goof around. If I make a mistake, it's cool. And, you know, I get to see guys that I used to play with, guys that I played against in college or played with in junior or what have you. And again, for the league, they sometimes make big announcements here. It's a way to obviously get all the marketers and, you know, all the deep pocket folks to feel special for a day or two. And, you know, it serves its purpose. I don't think if we think too hard about it, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice.
You know, the way I feel about it, I support it for the same reason that I support the World Cup, unlike a lot of people. It's not hurting anybody. It's not replacing anything. It's just there. It exists. It doesn't cause anyone trouble. It's fun. Maybe it's not a 10 out of 10 on the fun scale, but even if it's a 5 out of 10 on the fun scale, it's gravy. It's a bonus. And to me, unless your name's Jaromir Jagr, it's not really hurting anybody. So why not?
Yeah, and if you're one of the snubs, if you're Sidney Crosby or Corey Crawford, are you upset that you're not going to the All-Star game for 3 days, or Are you happy that you're taking 4 days off and you're going to the Dominican Republic, you know, for some R&R? I mean, it seems like it's kind of win-win whether you're an all-star or not.
Like, I can tell you for a fact, Corey Crawford 2 weeks ago told me exactly that. I asked him if he was upset about the snub, and he said all he could think about was going somewhere sunny and relaxing, and he seemed thrilled to not be going.
So, to play devil's advocate then, if we didn't have the all-star game, what kind of mid-season showcase alternatives are out there? I mean, you mentioned the World Cup. That format lends itself to more of a two-week kind of thing, but is there anything else the NHL could do to replace the All-Star game?
I mean, the only thing they could do based on the sort of schedule of the season is something international. I know if you go back to the 70s, it was always a thrill to see something like the Philadelphia Flyers playing the Red Army or the Habs playing the Red Army. I think that was spectacular. If we could have a KHL versus NHL showdown, it would be amazing. But the problem is, too big of an injury risk. I think it's more likely that the game's going to be played with more passion than a standard All-Star game. And if someone gets hurt, it's a disaster.
One thing I'm kind of thinking of is, what if you had one ultimate draft prospect game? We don't have a unifying game right now. You get some of the kids at the World Juniors. You know, you look at the CHL top prospects game this year, three of the five top draft picks are not going to be there. Auston Matthews is in Europe. Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi also in Europe. So they're not in the CHL. They don't qualify. What if you had a game, and I don't know how you fit the NHL into it, if you have it in an NHL arena somewhere, if you surround it with some other fun events, but let's see Auston Matthews, Jacob Chychrun, Puljujärvi, Matthew Tkachuk all in the same game. And, you know, it's around this time, I think, that people really in earnest start thinking about the draft. Central Scouting put out its midterm rankings not too long ago. You have the actual CHL top prospects game, and you'd have to figure that out some way. Obviously, it would be a replacement. But, I mean, maybe that's an option where you're still using high-level players that were probably a couple of them going to see next year, but you also give your stars a break. Maybe you have stars captain the teams.
And what I really, I like that because, yes, there'd be some injury risks, there always are, but there's also a ton to gain for the players. It's worth the risk because you could possibly up your draft status.
And with the current All-Star Game format, maybe you could even take the top 10 prospects and just throw them into this 3-on-3 tournament, invite them to the skills competition.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a low-risk injury thing. There's not really any hitting. Say, hey, top 10 prospects, go show us your coolest moves.
Yeah. And there again, I think, taps into what makes the All-Star Game fun, is if you have a bunch of 18-year-olds playing against NHLers, and Auston Matthews, you know, dangles Erik Karlsson, you know Erik Karlsson's coming back the other way, and he's going to do something nasty to get back at him, because no way is he going to get shown up.
Like a dad in beer hockey, beer league hockey. Yeah. There's always one of those dads who's whippersnapper.
Yeah.
Okay, mailbag time. This will be a recurring feature on the podcast where you listeners can submit questions to us on Twitter using the hashtag THNTalks. This week, we're looking ahead to the NHL trade deadline on February 29th. So, Beaver15 asks, do you feel the Blues are in need of a trade to boost their offense?
I think, to me, the best trade the Blues can make is one that they're going to make from within after the All-Star break, and that's bringing Jaden Schwartz back. He's got that bulldog mentality. He's a proven 60-plus point scorer, and he's still getting better. He's still in his early 20s. To me, he's shown in the past he can really produce with Vladimir Tarasenko playing the left wing on a line that has Tarasenko on the right. Last year it was Yuri Lehterä at center. So I think he's the best possible acquisition the Blues could get. To me, the thing the Blues need more than anything, more than pure offense, is someone with a winning pedigree. Last year, when they entered the playoffs, they had zero players who had ever played in a Stanley Cup final, let alone won a cup. And they had zero. They had one player who'd even been to a conference final. It was Steve Ott. So they desperately need winning experience. They do have Troy Brouwer this year, so there's a guy with one ring. But they need a lot more of it.
Yeah, I feel that I wouldn't do anything quite yet if I'm the Blues, because if they get knocked out in the first round again this year, even the second round, I think you really need to blow that squad up. I said it before on the website that I think maybe walk away from David Backes, who will be a free agent. And don't get me wrong, still a fantastic player, but you think about the salary he's going to command, you know, his current age. I think the Blues need more players who have won things, either in the NHL or even internationally on a more consistent basis. And, you know, the TJ Oshie trade, obviously that shook up the core a little bit. Was it enough? I think that's what we're going to find out this spring. If it wasn't, then I think, you know, you let Backes go, you find a completely different core. You center it around Vladimir Tarasenko, who's obviously one of the best offensive players in the league, and you try again, because what you're doing right now hasn't been working.
Colton Mann wants to know if the Maple Leafs will find a taker for Jonathan Bernier.
I can't imagine at this point. I mean, if you think of teams that are contenders, they're already going to have goaltending. Do you want a backup who had not quite number one credentials a couple of years ago, but was fighting to get them? If anything, I mean, James Reimer is the better chip, but if you're the Maple Leafs, you probably at this point think we should probably sign Reimer for a couple more years until Sparks and Antoine Bebo, you know, become viable NHL full-timers. Otherwise, I'm, you know, with the contract and with his results, I'm not sure what contender would want him.
And the question, too, is what would you give up? If you're any team, what would you give up to get Jonathan Bernier? What's he worth? Is he worth anything right now? I think his career value has never been lower than it is now. His confidence is shattered. And the problem with Bernier is he's a small goaltender. He's one of the smallest goaltenders in the NHL. So when a small guy's confidence goes, the holes are glaring. It's not like he's 6'6" that can sort of hang in there and block shots. He might be listed as 6 feet, but it's a generous listing. I think he's more like 5'11", 185 pounds. So slumping Bernier can be very civ-like, unfortunately.
And he's got another year at more than $4 million left on his contract. The Fonger 77 wants to know if Jerome Iginla is available.
From what we know, as recently as November, according to intel from our Colorado correspondents and the local beat writers there, Jerome Iginla has said he will not waive a no-trade clause. He doesn't want to move his family again. So there hasn't been an update in a few months, but as far as we know, that's still the case.
Should he want to be chasing a ring, or is he just happy there in Colorado?
See, I thought he was chasing a ring for a couple of years there, and maybe he kind of came to his senses and realized that, you know, he's had a Hall of Fame career already, and if he can have success at the tail end, then that's great. But yeah, he's got a family. Moving every year is not a fun thing for any athlete, and if he's comfortable in Colorado, they've got a great young core. I'm not saying that they're going to flick the switch and be contenders next year, but, you know, they could be a playoff team next year if they kind of smarten up and go back to the drawing board in terms of how they approach the game. They certainly have the talent. They got to add some pieces, but, I mean, they're not a lost cause by any means.
And it's a similar situation to Shane Doan over the last couple of years. And to me, I wonder, if there comes a time when Iginla suddenly is willing to waive it one of these years, I think that's a big sign that it's his final season, whether he said so or not. So if he's comfortable with his family, I still see him as a guy that could say, okay, this is my last push. I'm going to be away for a couple months, and then I'm home for good.
DJ Ush asks, do you think the Red Wings will go after Dustin Byfuglien or Andrew Ladd, or will they stand pat?
No. I don't think they're going to do anything big, and part of the reason is they are way up against the cap. They have very little room to maneuver in that regard, so any trade they're going to make is going to have to be a lateral one. So then you get into the question, who do you have to give up on that Red Wings roster that would net you enough salary to get a Byfuglien or a Ladd? And, you know, I think they made their big moves last year at the deadline, getting Jedlitsky, and then obviously over the summer they got Mike Green. This is a team where I think they're pretty content with where they are, and they also know that there's not a lot they can do just because of their salary cap situation.
And I think Ken Holland, historically, if you look at, I find GMs, they sort of follow a similar pattern around the deadline. Like David Poile in Nashville, for example, is a guy who gets really aggressive almost every year. And Holland, he's made a lot of big trades in his career, big signings. But I'm looking back historically, and I don't remember recently a really massive big ticket trade made by the Wings at the deadline. So it's more the Zidlickies of the world, the veterans, the sort of pieces to put them over the top.
All right, last one. You can probably guess who it's about. DJ Mikey C asks, if Stamkos doesn't agree to a deal soon, do the Lightning try to trade him?
I think you have to. And, well, I don't know. Maybe you don't have to, because right now you're looking really good if you're the Lightning, albeit, you know, in a wild card spot, but you're playing better since Jonathan Drouin was sent down. Maybe you kind of roll the dice and say, you know what? We have a team that could win the Stanley Cup. Washington's obviously the number one contender in the East. But maybe say, well, either we think we can beat the Caps in a seven-game series, or we hope that we just don't end up playing the Caps. But maybe you do one final kick, because what are you going to get right now at the deadline for Stamkos? Again, you're looking at his salary, which teams can actually afford him that are contending, and what's the return going to be, versus maybe you win a ring. Maybe you get hot, the triplets heat up again. I mean, you came really close last year. If Tyler Johnson doesn't break his wrist, maybe Tampa wins that series against Chicago. So maybe it's better just to hang on to him and say, you know what, we might lose him for nothing, but we'd rather have three more months of Stamkos than a third-round pick or something like that.
I agree all the way. And you know, I do think the return for Stamkos would be astronomical. If you look at even a guy like Antoine Vermette last year, he netted a first-round pick plus a prospect. So I do think you can get a lot for Stamkos. But in Tampa Bay's situation, what you're going to get for Stamkos is futures. You're going to get prospects. You're going to get first-round picks. And it's not really a fit for Tampa Bay, because this team is a contender now. It's a win-now team. So they're not really a team that's looking to build for the future. They're a team that's looking to win now. And the Atlantic Division is still very winnable. I think the Florida Panthers have played a bit over their head if you look at their possession numbers, whereas Tampa Bay is sort of, they're regressing to the mean in a positive way. I think they're absolutely legit. They're getting a lot healthier. And to me, if I'm Steve Yzerman, I treat Steven Stamkos like a guy you rented at the trade deadline. So picture him as a UFA, like an Andrew Ladd. You just acquired Steven Stamkos. Awesome. And you acquired him for nothing, because you traded nothing to get him, because he's already on your team. And to me, that's worth it.
All right. Thanks, guys. That's all for this week. Thanks for joining us. You can always find the latest from Matt Larkin and Ryan Kennedy on thehockeynews.com, and we'll see you next week.